This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
I think it's a good time to hit the reset button. I think he was right to hit the reset button, and I think that it was something that I think the White House needs. I think it's healthy.
White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus is out after losing a bitter internal battle with President Trump's new communications director, Anthony Scaramucci.
The fish stinks from the head down, but I can tell you two fish that don't stink, okay? And that's me and the president.
The foul-mouthed mooch dominated headlines for a moment until Senator John McCain's dramatic and jaw-dropping thumbs down on the GOP's repeal of Obamacare. With all the breaking news, how does one keep up, especially for a journalist?
Now we're talking about the healthcare bill, we're talking about his NS13 speech, we're talking about all these other things, but he actually opened up the week bashing Jeff Sessions for 3 days straight after doing the same thing in an interview with the New York Times.
That's Politico's White House reporter Nolan McCaskill. We'll hear how he keeps up with covering the very unconventional Trump administration.
This is like a month's worth of news that could happen in a single day.
All that and more coming up on episode 116 of The Rotunda. There are new rules for covering the White House thanks to the Trump administration. You simply can't approach a story without a dedicated team of fact-checkers, considering the president and his officials are known for generating alternative facts. You have to be resourceful and rely less on official access. Oh, and be prepared for a heavy dose of cyberbullying if you're a member of the press. Anyway, the Trump administration is a game changer in many respects when it comes to journalism. On this week's program, we catch up with Politico's White House reporter Nolan D. McCaskill as he recaps some of the big headlines dominating the news cycle.
It is a cruel and arbitrary decision.
We're better than this.
Obviously, it's a very difficult decision. It's not a simple one, but the president feels that it's the best one for the military.
So a little background. Nolan McCaskill is a Politico Fellow, an inaugural member of Politico's Journalism Institute. He's a 2014 graduate of Florida A&M University. Nolan went from the highest of seven hills in Tallahassee to Capitol Hill.
That's right. During my last year at FAMU, I participated in the first year of Politico Journalism Institute. Maybe 2 weeks after that ended, they offered me the job as a year-long fellow. So I finished my last semester up in Tallahassee, graduated, and 2 weeks later I was up here getting ready to start work at Politico.
So I see on your Twitter account that you've caught the eye of the president. He's given you his own name, calling you a scriptwriter?
Yeah, so maybe about a year ago from today, the president, Donald Trump, was then the GOP nominee. He was holding a rally and he just started railing on a Politico article saying he can't believe he reads Politico, and he essentially called me a scriptwriter.
And then I read the report that just came out. I can't believe it. In Politico. Politico, I can't believe it. And they wrote something, all cliches, all just written up by a scriptwriter.
I believe he had tweeted maybe a couple of days earlier that Hillary Clinton had mentioned him X amount of times in a speech. And so we pulled up that transcript and we wanted to fact check that to see if he was accurate. And we actually found out that he understated the amount of times that Hillary Clinton had mentioned him or alluded to him in his address. But the editor kind of put a negative spin on the headline, like 78 times Hillary Clinton slammed Donald Trump in her DNC speech or something. So I feel like he just looked at the headline and got upset and ended up calling me a scriptwriter at his rally.
And it was all cliches. You know, they used a little tweet one on me about tweet, and she said something about the campaign. Donald Trump doesn't know how to campaign, something like that. I just beat 16 people and I'm beating her.
That's funny. So fast forward to where we are now. Man, news after news, constant breaking news. There's too much going on. I don't even know where to begin, but let's start with the mooch, or Anthony Scaramucci.
Well, he's the new communications director. He's putting his foot down. He's threatening to fire any alleged leakers. He's already fired at least one person. Now Reince Priebus is out after he had some very profane things to say about Reince in an article with the New Yorker.
When I put out a tweet, and I put Reince's name in the tweet, they're all making the assumption that it's him because journalists know who the leakers are. So if Reince wants to explain that he's not a leaker, let him do that.
And so he's generating a lot of headlines. He's making it known that he's now in the White House, and we expect some more changes there.
Yeah, so he pretty much declared war within the White House with some of the other staffers, and it seems like he won the battle. As you mentioned, Reince Priebus is out, and you were there at the time of this shakeup. Could you paint a picture for us? What happened?
Okay, so I was with the White House press corps. We were boarding, we were unloading off of Air Force One. A couple of us saw Reince hopping into a car. Some more people noticed that Stephen Miller was in the car as well, along with Dan Scavino. A few minutes later, we checked our phones. We saw a tweet that Donald Trump had just announced a new chief of staff, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly. So I looked at my phone and I told the people around me that he just named a new chief of staff. We looked back toward the black SUV that Reince was in and started to take off. And over the next few minutes, we were all just sitting under the wing of Air Force One, waiting for the president to finish tweeting before he actually came down and spoke about what had just happened.
Why Secretary Kelly? Why John Kelly?
Reince is a good man. John Kelly will do a fantastic job. General Kelly has been a star, done an incredible job thus far, respected by everybody, a great, great American. Reince Priebus, a good man. Thank you very much.
So who knew what? Did Reince Priebus know this was coming? Did you get any sense that people knew this was going to happen when it did?
Oh, there had been some writing on the wall for some time now, especially with what Anthony Scaramucci told the New Yorker. So there had been a lot of reports even before that Reince's time is coming to an end at some point, although he really wanted to stay through at least a year so that he wouldn't be embarrassed by having one of the shortest tenures of a White House chief of staff.
It was something that I've always talked to the president about, which is, and I've always said to him, and he always agreed with me, anytime either one of us think that we need to make a change or move in a different direction, let's just talk about it and get it done.
So there's a little bit of debate about how he was let go, whether he resigned on his own, whether he was fired, or whether Trump asked him to resign. He went on CNN and said that he resigned on his own on Thursday, and eventually, I guess, Trump decided to make the decision public on Friday, which is pretty weird because if you have a sense that you're going to be fired, it really doesn't make much sense for you to travel to Long Island for the speech and then have to hurry up and get off the plane before the press sees you and Trump makes that announcement.
The president has a right to hit a reset button. I think it's a good time to hit the reset button. I think he was right to hit the reset button. And I think that it was something that I think the White House needs. I think it's healthy. And I support him in it.
It is very odd and peculiar. What's your takeaway from the changing of the guards? And what do you make of John Kelly?
I think it's just more of the same. We've seen a lot of movement out of this White House, not very much on policy, but when it comes to personalities and personnel movement, we've seen Sean Spicer's resigned. Mike Dubke, who was the former comms director, he's resigned. Anthony Scaramucci has fired Michael Short, who was an assistant to Sean Spicer. We believe that some of Reince's RNC allies who have been working in the White House, some of those guys may be either resigning or being fired to just leave the White House along with Reince. As far as John Kelly, I'm not sure that he has the political experience that sort of made Reince a perceived good hire. Reince had a good relationship with Paul Ryan. They're both have ties to Wisconsin. So he was someone who ran the RNC. He had good relationships with lawmakers. He knew how to fundraise. He knew people. He was thought to be someone from the so-called establishment who could help moderate Donald Trump and help him pass legislation, but we've seen none of that. I mean, the House eventually did pass a bill to repeal Obamacare, but the Senate has struggled to do the same. And the president, as you can see, is frustrated by that. He's calling for an end to the legislative filibuster, and he really wants to sign something immediately.
In giving a bone to the administration, it seems pretty consistent when you mentioned John Kelly's lack of experience compared to Reince. This is common in where there are a lot of people who don't have the particular experience for the job they're in.
Right, and that's one of the criticisms this administration gets. I mean, it's full of people. Even Trump mentioned yesterday, it's full of rich people. He's hired cabinet secretaries who have made a lot of money in their careers. He feels like their wealth can help them make the best deals for America because they've succeeded financially, personally, and they feel like they can help America succeed in the same vein.
Let's turn to healthcare. We witnessed the dramatic failure of the GOP repeal of Obamacare. Listen to this audible gasp when Senator John McCain issued the killing thumbs down vote. Senator John McCain is getting praise once again as the maverick. Could you touch on that, including some of the Trump tweets that followed?
Surprisingly, Donald Trump didn't target John McCain specifically. He instead directed his ire at Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell because Republicans time and time again have failed to do something on repealing Obamacare. This is a promise that they've made for 7 years. They finally have the power. They control the House. They control the Senate. They control the White House. But they've yet to repeal Obamacare. And so Donald Trump went on a bit of a tweet storm this morning and maybe a bit this afternoon, essentially claiming that 8 Democrats control the Senate because of the 60-vote majority rule. He's calling for an end of the legislative filibuster, essentially calling for most legislation to be passed with a simple majority of 50 votes, or 51 votes, excuse me, 50, if VP Mike Pence breaks the tie. But at the end of the day, the Senate still fell short of just the 50-vote threshold because of the so-called reconciliation budget procedure that they were trying to pass the bill on. So Donald Trump's saying there should be a 51-vote majority, but earlier this week we saw that Republicans still could not get 50 votes on a bill.
Why hasn't Trump been hands-on in the shaping of what will actually be seen as his health care proposal?
To be honest, the sense I've gotten is that Donald Trump doesn't really care about the policy as much as the optics of signing a bill. He wants to be able to point to something to say that he's done this for the American people. He's campaigning next week in West Virginia. He's trying to win re-election, even though it's still 2017. So he's focused on racking up achievements. He likes to praise the fact that he ushered Neil Gorsuch through to the Supreme Court. But aside from that, he doesn't have much to show for his early tenure as president of the United States.
You know, it's unusual to hear you say that he's campaigning. Why is he campaigning? Why is he still in campaign mode?
I think part of it is just he really loves the big crowds, the massive crowds. It really energizes him. I don't think he likes being holed up in the White House in Washington, sitting in meetings all day. So campaign rallies give him a place to just leave Washington, forget about all the politics going on there. He gets to be freewheeling. He gets to be himself. He gets to say all the things his advisors would tell him not to if he was talking to a reporter one-on-one. And it's just something that really energizes him and is fun for him. He really loves campaigning. And he's had maybe 5 or 6 campaign rallies already.
Under the Trump administration, America is once more a nation of laws. And once again, a nation that stands up for our law enforcement officers.
Speaking of campaign rally, Trump gave a controversial speech to law enforcement officials. He pretty much encouraged police to rough up suspects taken into custody. You were there for that, correct?
Yeah, so Donald Trump was speaking about the MS-13 gang. He went off cue a few times and just spoke about random things. He was slamming Obamacare. Excuse me, he was slamming Obama. He was talking about the Senate's effort to repeal Obamacare. And he seemed to endorse police brutality, which marked a tweet from the local police department that they do not endorse that. And that's something that went viral over the past few hours since Trump's address was finished. It was a pretty bizarre speech. It was supposed to be focused on MS-13. On the flight there, Stephen Miller, who was a Trump aide, he would only talk to the press about the MS-13 speech. And so it's kind of surprising that an aide who was expected to gaggle about the top news of the day would only talk about this speech. But in this speech, Donald Trump talked about MS-13, Obama, campaigning, big crowds, and endorsed police brutality.
And when you see these towns and when you see these thugs being thrown into the back of a paddy wagon, you just see them thrown in, rough. I said, please don't be too nice. Like when you guys put somebody in the car and you're protecting their head, you know, the way you put their hand over. Like, don't hit their head and they've just killed somebody, don't hit their head. I said, you can take the hand away, okay?
Gainesville, Florida's police department has rejected President Donald Trump's remarks that appeared to advocate for the rougher treatment of people in police custody. The department said, quote, it rejects these remarks and continues to serve with respect. The tweet has gone viral, and department spokesman Officer Ben Tobias also tweeted that those who applauded should be ashamed. Hey, I'm Tramell Gomes, your host. The Rotunda is your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. This program is supported by listeners like you. If you're new to the Rotunda, it came to life in 2015. Each week, those people, those issues important to the Sunshine State have all been featured right here. Leaders from all parts of the state, and we've traveled to Washington and even Cuba. This is simply what I love to do. And I've forged amazing partnerships with organizations like the Florida Press Association, news services, blogs, and apps. And we continue to grow each week. Visit RotundaPodcast.com. Follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, at Rotunda Podcast, and on Facebook. On our website, there is a donate button. We welcome your generous contribution along with your tips and story ideas. And as always, thanks for your support. Welcome back to the Rotunda. I'm chatting with Politico's White House reporter, Nolan D. McCaskill. So just rolling on with all the news, let's turn to Trump's proposed ban on transgender military personnel. How is this rolling out? What's next?
So Donald Trump caught a lot of defense officials off guard when he tweeted what he did. I read a BuzzFeed article a few days ago that mentioned that some people from the Pentagon were afraid that Donald Trump was announcing that he was nuking the country because he sent about 3 tweets on the transgender ban. And so on the first tweet, it was sort of a cliffhanger until he finished the tweet. We didn't really know where he was going with it. So that struck a little fear in some people. And he announced that, but the Defense Department has said that it won't be implemented immediately. So we think Donald Trump sort of jumped the gun. He got impatient. He tweeted it before it was actual policy, so at this time there's no implementation plan, and so transgender people can continue to serve in the military right now.
What about Jeff Sessions? You mentioned on Twitter that you were surprised to hear Sessions admit to being hurt by Trump's constant attack on Twitter.
Right, it's hard to believe that Trump started this week off bashing Attorney General Jeff Sessions, because now we're talking about the health care bill, we're talking about his MS-13 speech, we're talking about all these other things, but he actually opened up the week bashing Jeff Sessions for 3 days straight after doing the same thing in an interview with the New York Times.
Seeing the president's criticism of you, do you think it's fair?
Well, it's kind of hurtful, but the president of the United States is a strong leader. He can make that clear at any time. I serve at the pleasure of the president.
Yes. So Jeff Sessions has done, I think, maybe 2 interviews since Trump has called him beleaguered and very weak on quote-unquote Hillary Clinton crimes. He did say that he was hurt by Trump's comments, which is something that struck me as odd, because Trump is a guy who loves generals. I mean, that's why he named John Kelly in part his new chief of staff. He's a former general. He had Michael Flynn as his national security advisor. He's a general. He's got James Mattis leading the Pentagon. He's a general. And for Sessions to say he's hurt, that sort of shows weakness at a time when Trump is obviously considering replacing him with someone else because he's upset that he recused himself from this Russia thing. And so it's really shocking. It seems like he wasn't making the best case for him to remain as Attorney General, because at a time when Trump is looking for strength, Jeff Sessions admitted that he was hurt by the president's comment.
Well, you know, I understand his feelings about it, because this has been a big distraction for him. I would be glad to yield in that circumstance, no doubt about it. But I do believe that we are making tremendous progress.
Looking closer to Florida, as you know, Donald Trump has a really good friend in Governor Rick Scott.
President-elect Trump, when I met with him last week, I said, look, I want to help you. We have great Republican governors. I'll help you with Republican governors. We've got to repeal and replace Obamacare. I want to help you do that.
With all the news going on, any linkage or anything that sticks out that would be beneficial for the state or work in Rick Scott's favor as he looks to further his own political future?
Not sure too much about that, but I know that Donald Trump would really like to see Rick Scott as the next Florida senator. He believes that Rick Scott is an ally who could help him advance his agenda in the Senate. He wants him to unseat Bill Nelson and hopefully for him at least join a GOP majority so that they could finally get things moving in Washington.
How about you, Nolan? How do you cover all of this and keeping track of this chaotic news cycle?
Well, the hardest part is just keeping up with the news cycle. I mean, I have to keep track of a daily schedule just to know what happened on what day. Because Monday, we were talking about Jeff Sessions. Tuesday, we were talking about Jeff Sessions. Friday, we were all focused on John Kelly and the Senate health care bill. So this is like a month's worth of news that could happen in a single day. And so for me, you just really have to do a lot of reading. I have to spend a lot of time on social media reading what other people are doing. You really have to stay abreast of this stuff because it moves very quickly. News doesn't stay very long, especially when Trump is giving interviews to the New York Times for 45 minutes or the Wall Street Journal for 45 minutes. So the hardest part is just staying abreast of that when it comes time for you to write a story, you know what's new and what isn't.
How have things been since leaving Florida A&M University and making your way to Capitol Hill?
It's been a very, very wild ride. When I left, well, before I got offered this job, I actually had no interest in politics. It wasn't something I followed very closely. I mean, aside from President Obama and VP Biden and Michelle, I couldn't really name many people in politics, maybe aside from House Speaker John Boehner. So when I got to political, I had to learn a lot of things. I had to learn how legislation moves. I had to learn how things work. I had to get used to a new city, a new job, a new issue that I've never really covered before. And since then, it's taken me all the way to Air Force One. I spent some time reporting on Capitol Hill. I was at the Hilton during Obama's last White House Correspondents' Dinner. I've seen Marine One take off. It's just been a very wild ride. I've gotten to go with the Trump campaign to maybe five or six states the weekend before the election. I've seen people I've never thought I'd seen. I have pictures with Attorney General Eric Holder. Met a lot of lawmakers. I ran into Peter King and shook his hand yesterday. He's a New York congressman. And so I've just had a very, very interesting experience. Meeting people and doing things and seeing things I never thought I'd actually do. When people used to ask me where I thought I'd be after college, I really just saw myself maybe as a general assignment porter at some local or regional newspaper, and I somehow ended up in Washington, D.C., and it's been limitless opportunities, and it's just really hard to put into words, and I'm thankful to even have these opportunities. And As an African-American man, to show people that you don't have to go into sports or entertainment, that you can cover important issues like politics and policy, and you can get close to the president and some of the most powerful people in the country and the world.
As an African-American man, there has been a lot of dog whistling going on, and race has been at the forefront in many ways in this administration. How do you deal with those issues?
Sometimes you just have to take yourself out of certain situations. As a reporter, it's in your best interest to try to remain objective. And so Donald Trump may say some things that cross a particular line, but when I'm reporting, I'm reporting. And so I just have to rely on the facts. If I want to portray a certain feeling of that maybe his comments are making people feel, I'll talk to the right people to get that message out. As far as me, it's not my role to complain about the things he says or does. It's just to report the facts.
It is an interesting time to report on the White House in this administration, unlike many others. What is your takeaway as you continue and prepare for never-ending busy weeks?
My takeaway is just that news never stops. You feel like there will be a lot more changes in this White House as the weeks and months continue. We're still watching what happens with healthcare. Will the Republicans actually repeal Obamacare? Will they give up and decide to work with Democrats on a bipartisan measure? Now that Donald Trump has named his DHS secretary, his chief of staff, what's going to happen there? Will he nominate someone else? Can that person actually make it through a Senate confirmation with Republicans only having a 52-seat majority? So there are a lot of issues and things to watch, and I'm sure Trump will say something to shed light on other issues that we haven't even been talking about. And so we've just got to do our best to keep up.
Well, Nolan McCaskill, thanks for joining The Rotunda this week, and we look forward to having you back on again soon. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Politico's Nolan McCaskill. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. Be sure to join us again next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.